It's Monday, April 25th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. This morning, the Supreme Court announced that it will take up a major gun rights case from New York that could potentially lead to residents being given the right to carry a gun without cause. This is bad news for anyone hoping to double park in Manhattan in the future. Now that Joe Biden has become the first U.S. president to recognize Turkey's killing of Armenians as genocide, Turkish President Erdogan is threatening to recognize the United States genocide of Native Americans, making this the weirdest spin on, "I'll show you mine if you show me yours." On Friday, Caitlyn Jenner announced that she will run to replace Gavin Newsom as governor of California. She's running as a Republican, and in keeping with party tradition, she has already denounced herself. Liberals are pushing Joe Biden to request an expansion of Medicare eligibility from people over 65 to include those who are 50 plus. This would be a huge help for millennials and Gen Zs to bridge the gap between living off their parents to living off the system. Yesterday in a Fox News interview, Lindsey Graham said that there is no systemic racism in the United States, which is clearly something you'd expect to hear from a guy like Lindsey, who has absolutely nothing in his closet he could be discriminated for. Saturday Night Live announced that Elon Musk will host a show on May 8th. Elon's hosting will really help SNL with the all-important douchebag demographic, especially for those who aren't already watching for Pete Davidson. What is it with the Pete jokes? I like Pete. Speaking of ratings, according to the overnights, last night's Academy Awards was the lowest watched Oscars in decades, with an estimated 9.8 million people tuning in compared to 24 million who watched last year. To be fair, the numbers would have been higher had anyone in the cast of Best Picture winner Nomadland owned a TV to watch it on. The highlight of last night's Academy Awards may have been Glenn Close doing the butt dance routine from the Spike Lee film School Days, making this the first time since 1987's Fatal Attraction that this much attention was given to Glenn Close's ass. After seemingly rearranging the order of the winners last night so that the Oscars could conclude with Chadwick Boseman's posthumous win for Best Actor, Anthony Hopkins was instead named the winner. For a guy who never sang or danced on screen, who would have guessed Anthony Hopkins would be this year's La La Land? During his long and awkward acceptance speech for Best Supporting Actor, Daniel Kaluuya strangely mentioned his mom and dad having sex, which means that Chadwick Boseman wasn't the only one getting screwed last night. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home for this TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying this, but congratulations to two-time winner Rudy Giuliani, who won two Razzies over the weekend.
Elizabeth?
Hi there. Happy Monday. That Oscars was a real train wreck, which makes sense because it took place at a train station.
You could have told that would have gotten the drums.
Oh, sorry. Just thought of it in the moment. I kept riffing, baby. Always riffing. Always on the fly.
No, that's the riffing on this show. We learned that from the last time.
Stuart.
Watching the Oscars in Union Station for 2 hours is almost as bad as being in Union Station for 2 hours.
2 hours? Son, that was 3.5.
Yeah, I turned it off, though.
So, okay, all right, there you go.
Chris.
Hey, what's up? Happy Monday, everybody.
I think we have Joe on, but I don't know where he's at, so I'm just going to go ahead and go to Danny.
Hey, everybody. Happy Monday.
I'm here, you guys.
Oh.
My camera is not working on my computer, and I don't know how to handle it. But since we are a podcast, I am here to tell you, hi, everyone listening on Google Podcasts. and a very happy National Pretzel Day. I am actually enjoying hot pretzels, but you can't see that because my computer has decided to, of all the times to do a camera update, now it's had a whole week to do it, and it does it at 5:50.
Well, you look like a really nice station, Joe.
I put Union Station up here because that was the home of the Oscars. If the Oscars are worse next year, it'll be at the Greyhound Station downtown.
Wow.
Nice.
Danny looks like he's in a box. Danny, are you in a box? It's not a box?
I'm waiting for this computer to reboot so I can go on to the laptop instead of this phone. So,
Danny has also, the same problem I do.
My device had to upgrade right now, just like Joe's.
This is what happens when we're off for a week.
No.
Everything's literacy.
Decided to do it now.
Well, listen, I mean, we're kind of keeping tradition. Every time we take a long break, our Monday episode, there's always something that goes out.
Wait, of Danny, going. Do you guys have the same kind of computer?
I've decided it. I'm good.
I'm about 9 minutes away, so.
What kind of computer do you have?
Mac.
Joe, what do you have?
Okay, nerds, we don't care about what kind of computers they
have. What's wrong with you?
What kind of megabits are you running? How many torsos are you working at? Get out of here.
What the hell is a torso?
I don't know. It just sounded
what
funny.
What kind of graphics card you got, man?
Yeah, man. You got to update your hard drive. You got to close all your windows out.
Guys, before you answer Stuart's question, let's give the audience time to get pens and pen and paper to write it down.
I'm wondering if they both have the same software that decided to update at the same time, okay? It's not an unreasonable thought.
I'm going to tell you right now, I can tell you 100% that all of my torsos are fine.
Torsos are going to be new computer slang, goddamn it, I'll tell you what.
Tonight, instead of raising a hand, just scream like uncontrollably.
That's what I normally do. I'm just going to interrupt. like I normally do.
Whatever. We'll figure it out somehow.
Yeah, the decorum has gone out the window.
Just howl.
Yeah.
There's a reason for the howl, though.
No, I know.
Yeah, it's howling is fucking cool. That's why.
Their sound mixer who had the nickname like Wolf died. Wah, wah, bringing the show down at the top.
Howling's also just fucking cool, so.
It is cool.
Okay, so let's start tonight's show. So we actually have a lot to cover tonight, so I'm going to try and get to everything, so let's see how it goes. We were off last week and missed some of the big stories. So we're going to start tonight with just one question, in which I'll ask you one question about the stories we didn't get to cover while we were off. It took the jury just 10 hours to convict former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin on all three counts of second and third degree murder and manslaughter for the killing of George Floyd. So my question to you is, I don't have to ask any of you how you feel about the guilty verdict because I think we can all agree it was the right decision. But what I do want to ask you is, whether this will be seen as a landmark moment of justice for people of color, or was this just an obvious case of murder that the guilty verdict was the only thing that the jury could do? Chris, let's start with you.
Thank you. First, I want to say this, first of all, it was actually kind of cool to see how quickly they came with the verdict because, like, I don't know if you are familiar with the past, but usually when it was like in the past, especially if we're talking like the 40s, 50s, and you know, longer ago, juries that were all white that were convicting a black man would have a verdict in like an hour. Like they would barely get into the room before they would have a verdict. So it was kind of great to see that in the reversal. The only thing I would say is I don't know if it's a great symbol for people of color. Because at the end of the day, it was kind of like when Leo won the Oscar, like they almost had to, like, you know, like we were all like great. It was happy for him, but we were also like, I mean, that's not really the role it was meant for. It's kind of the same thing with this, verdict. It's like, yeah, you did the right thing, but like, did you do the right thing because it was the right thing? Or did you do the right thing because there was so much fucking evidence that you could not say no otherwise? Like, that's hard for us to see that when there was so many videos. I mean, literally, there was like four different videos on four different angles. They couldn't have denied what he did. They just couldn't. You know what I'm saying? Now, if it had been a different case like Tamir Rice or something like that and this verdict came out, maybe we would be a good symbol. So I'm still on the fence as a person of color myself. I don't know about anybody else.
What I wanted to add to that to Chris is the way that I did it, is that thank God there was those videos. Now, if it had been the same event happening, the exact same thing, if Derek Chauvin had done exactly what he did to George Floyd, and if we didn't have these videos, would the outcome have been the same? Right. And I still question that. I mean, yes, you know what? We should be happy with this verdict. And, you know, I mean, they did what they have to do, and that was the right thing. But it still makes me question it. You know, when you have people in government saying that there is no systemic racism, right, regardless of, you know, the idiots have said this over the weekend, but, you know, I just think, thank God for that video. But would it have been a different outcome if those videos did not exist?
Well, no, because I mean, we've know that in the past that shit has happened. I mean, how many times has there been like, you know, just audio recording or something like that have gone down of a cops killing somebody of color, and then they start fucking around with the evidence and putting things where they weren't, and timelines and shit like that. I mean, look at the Central Park Five. They literally manipulated entire timelines to get these five children to go to prison when they were nowhere near what happened, and all their stories didn't line up and all this other shit. Like, they literally just manipulated the shit to make sure that these men went down, or these kids, sorry, went down. So it's happened in the past. So it's hard to, you know, really believe that the system is reforming when, you know, we've seen otherwise.
Yeah. Pete, and then I'll go to Stuart. Go ahead, Pete.
I mean, you know, obviously the fact that the verdicts came down the way they did was a good thing for a lot of reasons. I mean, but, you know, it's just so obvious, though, that this is not like that thing that's going to change the way police are held accountable, unless every police officer does something that is so obviously murder. You know, I mean, and all you have to look at is the three incidents that have happened in the last week that are all, you know, been police shootings of people of color that are not as cut and dry as what happened with George Floyd. I mean, if you look at the female police officer, she should definitely go to jail for what happened, but she wasn't trying to shoot him. She's an idiot. She grabbed the wrong weapon. I mean, there's 10 cops around. There's body cameras on everybody. She's not going to pull out a gun and shoot him, when she could have just tased him. I mean, and so she should go to jail for manslaughter.
And never be a cop again, because an idiot like that should not have a gun with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, but she wasn't an idiot. She's been a cop for a very long time.
26 years.
Decorated cop. And every cop knows what side your sidearm is on and what side your taser's on.
But Joe, I mean, it's so hard to say that somebody would have just cold-bloodedly shot somebody with all those police around, and so obviously, you know, there's so much accountability right in that moment. I mean, so that case to me is like, well, yeah, she should definitely go to jail for what she did, and there should definitely be repercussions for it, but it's not the same thing as what happened with Derek Chauvin. And then the Adam Toledo thing that happened, you know, in Chicago, to me, that could easily go either way. That could potentially be that the cop, that he really did have a gun until the last second, and the cop shot him. You don't know that for sure. But again, these are cases where it could have been a racist cop doing something that racist cops do all along, or it could just be that people were in the wrong place at the wrong time and bad things happen. But the Chauvin case, that is just such an obvious case of murder. It was murder. I mean, you can't look at that. I mean, what the prosecuting attorney said at the end was the best thing that he said during the whole trial, which was, believe your eyes, because that's all they had to do. You know, and once they did that, it didn't really matter whatever else kind of testimony was out there.
It worked.
Yeah, and I think Chris had a good point where, you know, that is it just this one clear, obvious case, or is it a whole systemic change? You know, I mean, hopefully it's a systemic change. I see no reason to believe that it will be, because that just hasn't happened yet. I think Peter had a good point. The cases involving an officer shooting are, I think, different, because pulling a trigger takes I mean, how long does pulling a trigger take? It doesn't take very long. And the decision can immediately be fatal. Kneeling on someone's neck for,
10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes. That is a much more clear-cut decision-making timeline.
Yeah,
and it's a clear continuation of this the violence. Whereas, yeah. A finger can slip on a trigger, I guess. So, that's possible. You can't accidentally kneel on someone's neck for 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, just in the other cases where pulling the gun instead of the taser, and the whole hair trigger approach itself needs to be reevaluated, independent of the Chauvin verdict, which is obviously a good thing, as a lot of people pointed out here and elsewhere. It's doesn't seem like it's going to make a huge sea change, unfortunately, just yet. It's going to take a lot more cases. And because there are other cases that don't involve so many filmed moments, it's going to be a lot harder. But, if you have cops grabbing the wrong, weaponry, basically, or feeling, or like the 14, 15-year-old girl, Micaiah, I think her name was.
Yeah.
Who apparently, yes, she had a knife, but if you can't take down a 15-year-old girl with a knife, what the fuck are you doing? Come on. And as they pointed out, everybody else has pointed out, they could take down mass shooters, take them to Burger King, and leave with them safely. And those people are armed to the teeth. You can't take down one 15-year-old girl with a knife.
I mean, yeah, but did they even get the opinion of the girl that she was coming out with a knife if she felt that it was okay that this happened the way it did?
That's where
I kind of draw the line, because if somebody's coming at me with a knife, I don't care what race they are, what color they are, I don't care what God they pray to, shoot them as soon as possible.
No, that's a terrible approach, and you know it. That's terrible. Yeah. Also,
it's hard to say that because I've also seen cops take down somebody who's like swinging an axe. I've seen some cops take down somebody who was swinging a machete and they didn't die. All they did was tase them, put them in handcuffs. So
yeah,
you're telling me you can take down a guy with an axe, but you can't take down a girl with a knife.
So. I think the difference is that she was threatening someone else with a knife and not the cop. Matter. If she was threatening the cop with the knife, I think it'd be different.
It's still a disproportionate
response to what is happening in the situation, and that is the overall policing tactic.
I mean, unless she had the girl on the ground or like backed up in the corner with a knife, like pressing it to her throat as she's like trying to struggle with her, maybe you could shoot her. But like, also then you could still put bullets in other places that won't kill the person.
Here's the problem, though. We all have a different opinion of this.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, if the cop doesn't shoot her and then she ends up stabbing this girl, then they ask the cop, why didn't you stop this from happening? So it's like there's so many which ways this can go. And that's why I just keep going back to the thing about the Chauvin case, is that it just was so obviously what it was that anybody who wants to claim that this is such a watershed moment for justice, it's not. And it's sad that it's not
accountability, not justice.
It's not. It's you know, it's the only way we're ever going to have accountability for police is if there's a whole re-understanding of how police are supposed to work, and that's probably never going to happen.
Yeah.
Although today, Pete, weren't we listening to something, or I read something somewhere that said that there's a lot of police officers that are doing early retirement.
Yeah.
And people were saying, oh, people don't want to be cops anymore because of what's happening. But Pete and I were talking about this, and we're like, well, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Let's get these people retired, because clearly something's not working in terms of their training or in terms of how they're doing or handling situations. Maybe you need to start, fresh with a whole new group of people.
Yeah, if you think you can't handle what's happening and what's happening in the country safely, then by all means, retire early. Please do.
Absolutely.
But please do not take that police training into some other vaguely security adjacent thing and weaponize that against people, because that happens a lot too.
Yeah. But I mean, it's so true, because none of these cases we're talking about involve a cop that's a rookie cop or only been on the job a year or two. These are all cops 10, 15.
Yeah.
In the case of the Sean case that was, she's with 27 years. So, I mean, like, these, maybe they should retire earlier.
Yeah.
And so that we get in younger police officers who could be trained the right way to handle it. And then instead of maybe replacing some of them, maybe they should replace some of them with psychologists and with social workers.
Focus on de-escalation versus force.
That guy who stopped the lieutenant, the army lieutenant. Did you see the video of that guy?
Oh yeah,
I'm glad he got fired. He's like, do you want to ride the lightning? I'm like, you're pulling over a guy because he had a temporary plate. And he's an army officer. And that guy was just like, I don't know who he thought he was, but it's
the cop.
I'm glad that nothing happened other than like getting pepper sprayed, that it didn't escalate anymore, because that's just what made it hilarious, because that guy was just so like, he thought he was like super cop. And the only thing that was super about him was the super size sub 8 about an
stop
hour
it,
earlier.
Joseph, stop it. Stop it, sir.
No, but Stuart's right. It's this whole militarization, and we treat them as like infallible superheroes that are always might and right, when they are humans and can make mistakes and often do and have human biases. But we encourage those biases through training.
I'm sorry, I don't care like how scared I might be with a cop with a drawn gun on me. If the cop says, "Do you want to ride the lightning?" I'm gonna laugh. Come on, dude. I mean, at least you know if you're gonna get
you can laugh because you're white, Joe. Hire me to be your writer.
Please hire me to be your writer, because damn.
I just think my family's in law enforcement in Chicago, and I'm always I always think about them when something happens, and you know they're good cops. They really are. I mean, they've done wonderful work for the city. But I also do believe that there are a lot of cops that have either an old school mentality, or they should just not be cops, period, because we live in a country where a kid shot someone and they let him walk away, that Kyle Rittenhouse. And to me, that is what the issue is when it comes to policing, I think. And that's, where it all stems from. If you have something like that that can happen, then we're in serious problems. And
well, it also would help too, like, I know this, that's the thing too, because like, it sounds so anti-American because, I say things like sometimes we might be a little too free, but like we are low key because every county, every state has their own different like rules for law enforcement, what can be done and what can't be done. And that allows for a lot of mistakes to be made because, if one thing's legal in one county, one thing's legal, illegal in another county. And, you're not supposed to use this technique, but other police use this technique. Like, that's what makes it so hard to investigate these things, because there's so many intricate rules within law enforcement, and there needs to be a blanket fucking outline of how we do a law enforcement. That's the only way it works. But people don't want to do that because then they say we're putting it on freedom, or we're turning our country into a police or a militarized state. But like, there's probably a reason why you don't hear about a lot of this shit happening in the military, because they're actually trained to do this. And the SOP is standard across the entire board of the military, because I was in the Marines. I go to somebody in the Army and I ask them, like, what are you supposed to do before engaging? They're probably going to say the same thing to me, maybe in different words, but it's going to be the same similar rules before they can actually pull the trigger and shoot somebody. Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to. They always show in movies your finger on the trigger, but my understanding from what I've heard is ears. You're never supposed to put it on until you're actually going to fire.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go to Stuart, then I want to move on because we could spend hours on this.
Yeah,
we
could.
Another thing is just, it also goes back to the gun issue where, because guns are so ubiquitous in our country and the freedom people have with them makes law enforcement's job much more difficult. And it also, I think, they're much more scared of being shot, whereas places in Japan, places in Europe, a lot of the law enforcement officers don't need firearms because the population, the citizens, don't have them.
And it's lawless chaos in all those places, right, Stuart? It's just anarchy, baby.
Yeah, giant lizards running around Japan, crashing into buildings.
Yeah. Okay. So Caitlyn Jenner filed paperwork to run for governor in the event that the recall movement forces an election for Gavin Newsom. Now I was going to ask you, Pete, what is the status of that? It is going to happen?
Yeah, well, they're going to. They announced today that there are enough people that signed the petition for the recall. So what happens next, apparently, is that they send a letter to each one of these people asking them if they want to take back their signature. And if they still have enough people after all that's done, then it's like between 60 and 80 days, we have to have a recall election. And if Gavin Newsom were to lose, he would not be able to be on the ballot for the election that would come after that. But the reality of it is, he's not going to lose. This is just Republicans wasting our time and trying to put us in an unhealthy situation where we're going to have to go out and vote in large groups just because they feel like fucking around.
Well, we'll see who's vaccinated and who's not when cases go up in certain areas, then, won't we?
Yeah, sure.
So my question then is, are we allowed to call this a joke, or will the politically correct police come for us if we do? So I'm talking about Caitlyn Jenner. See, for me, I mean, my personal take on this is, I don't care if you're gay, straight, bisexual, transgender. I care if you're A, qualified, and B, not related to the most narcissistic family in the world, and a family who has been a cancer to society. That's my take on this. So, Pete.
See, you know what? And again, I'm going to be the person that everybody else is going to cringe when I say what I'm going to say. But the reality of it is, If you take Caitlyn Jenner's life, what part of that leads you to believe that she should be running for anything other than possibly her life? She won the men's decathlon in 1976. Then did absolutely – oh, no, sorry. She also was in the Village People's hit film Can't Stop the Music in 1980. And then the next big thing she did was marry into the Kardashian family. And then to stay relevant after all that, she cut off her cock. And you know what? And I'm not saying that I'm not saying that to be transphobic, because it doesn't matter.
Still pretty transphobic, but –
What?
Still pretty transphobic.
No, but it's not, though.
It is.
The reality of it is – she could be transgender, she could be gay, she could be whatever she wants to be. It doesn't make you fucking qualified to run a state.
Well, that I agree with.
West Virginia, just because you were an Olympic athlete and then became transgender. You could, these are things that just don't equal each other out. And the reality of it is like the problem that I have with this, and one of the reasons why this question's even here, is because there are going to be people that are going to say, oh my God, how brave, look at what she's doing. And all because all she did was make a life change. And the reality of that is, that's good for her. It doesn't mean that we all have to then say, oh, this is a great fucking idea. Because there are going to be some people who are like, there's a level of liberalism in this state in California that makes people that are liberal not want to be liberal anymore, because you cannot criticize her. You cannot criticize her for wanting to be governor because she made this life decision. And again, that to me just is ridiculous. And I find that to be so offensive in a way. And I don't understand why anybody would take this seriously even for a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if people are so ultra liberal that would vote for her even if they hate the Kardashians or they're not on board.
No, nobody's going to vote for her.
She's being brave to do this. She's going to have our vote. That's what I worry about. Elizabeth, and then I'll go to you.
Well, she's not the first ever transgender candidate, so that at least is that pressure's off. And I agree with most of what you're saying. And in fact, the more progressive, honest thing would be look at her policies regardless of the fact that she is trans, and you can see that A, she has no fucking policies, B, supported Trump, C, has not given a fuck about the current laws that are passing in Texas and Arkansas and North Carolina and other places that are actively harming trans kids, forcing parents to, either not give them care if they want it and threatening to take the kids away or turn parents. It's terrible situations in multiple states. And she's made, as far as I know, no real comment about that. You think that would be a top issue for her, considering the fact that she is in fact trans. Right. But regardless of all that, she's not fucking qualified. Decathlons are not politics. reality shows are not politics. I mean, I guess
sex
you could argue
is not politics either.
And gender reassignment is not a thing. And what I'm finding though is I don't think people are really that on board as far as what I've seen. It was announced, and I feel like everybody, including liberal people I know, were like, "Man, fuck her. She's not qualified. Fuck her." And the truly progressive thing, as I said at the top, is not because like, oh no, I don't want a trans candidate. No one's saying that. Everyone's like, God damn it, I don't want another reality star candidate. That's the big
right.
issue.
That's true.
We learned our lesson exactly.
Here's the problem I have.
Maybe we are making progress. So.
If we had had like a regular TMI show right now, this would be a sketch that half the people in the room would go, I'm not really sure we should do this.
But you're focusing on the sex change, the cutting off her cock, all things that are very transphobic.
The thing is,
and that's not the point of it.
That's not why this is relevant.
We'll say that because of that, you cannot do any of that.
There are people who are going to say that, but you ignore that element. That's not the funny part of it. The funny part is that she's not fucking qualified to do anything like this. She's fucking qualified to be on TV and apparently a decathlon in the 70s.
She's qualified to run drive policy when she can't drive the PCH.
That too. She fucking hit somebody with a car.
You tried, Stuart. You fucking tried. I saw you trying to get that joke in. It didn't work.
So Well, I don't think she's a serious candidate. I mean, I don't. Republicans aren't going to vote for her. Democrats aren't going to vote for her. I think the Republican Party wants to have a trans candidate running as a Republican so that they can pass all these bills in these other states and say, hey, we're not transphobic. Look, we have our own
trans candidate.
Yeah, we have a trans candidate. You know, like the whole it goes back to the whole my African American bullshit. Like, it's just a ploy to slide all that other legislation, the bullshit through.
Like, you know what? Like,
and have a shield.
As fucked up as it is, that's like low key kind of smart, because what better way if you're trying to get some policies passed than to have a trans candidate, especially in a time period that we are right now? Like, that would make such a statement to see a trans Republican candidate out there like speaking for conservatives and shit. Like, it would be crazy.
The problem is she's not capable of doing that because she's an idiot.
Yeah, right.
That's an issue.
Yeah, that is an issue. But
this is the thing, though. The Republicans don't want it. I mean, like, you guys think that maybe they want a trans candidate?
No, I don't think
they want a trans candidate. They don't want her to win.
They want that's the last thing they want. What they want is to say, hey, look at how stupid the people in California are that this transgendered person is running for office. Because you have to understand something.
Good point.
There's this identity politics that goes on right now that says the people on the coast are animals. They're horrible human beings. They're godless. They don't follow any of the rules. They want everything their way, because the reality of it is the coasts are what pay into the government the most, to pay all the states that don't. So when you cannot afford to pay your way, what do? You pick on the guy who does, because it makes you feel better about you. So anytime we become a joke to somebody else, like right now, and this is something that I was reading this morning, there's a big thing going around that Texas and Florida, who have been completely open for a period of time right now, have less cases than states that have been in lockdown or in some version of a lockdown in quite a while. Now, the reality of it is those two states are run by governors that have no problem in making the numbers look the way they do. And the reality is they probably do have more cases than we do. They just don't want to say it. But it goes back to the narrative, the godless people, the ones with the gays and who love the immigrants and the transgender people. They're the bad people. They're the bad ones. And that's what they want to do. They don't want a trans candidate. They never would.
They want a shield.
It's one of the many splinters happening within the Republican Party to begin with. Is you have like the crazy QAnon people. You have the Marjorie Taylor Greens. I don't know that there's anyone in theory that would want a trans candidate, but I know she's running as a Republican, but like, can you just run as like a member of a party? This is an honest, I have no idea, political question. Can you just run as a member of a party, even if they have not like caucused you or backed you or whatever.
You can in theory run for what in any party you want to be a part of. Too. I mean, look, this is a moot point because it's never going to get to an election because Newsom's not going to lose the recall. But the reality of it is, it's not a question of whether or not they want it or they don't want it. It took them this long to say that they even want women to be in the Republican Party. So we haven't even gotten past women yet. So the idea that we get to a point where a man who chose to become a woman, that's another couple of decades from now. There's not even a thought. It's not even the Republicans. This is about liberals more than anything else, because we have to all applaud anybody who does anything that somebody else thinks is a little bit different.
In theory, but as I've seen, I don't think that's happening though in this case. I've seen more and more it's not. Yeah.
Happy about Caitlyn Jenner running for governor.
Yeah.
The only I mean it she's gonna make a bunch of money for whoever is the manager of campaign. That's it.
Yeah.
No,
that's true. Okay, so on to our main story tonight.
Yes.
Last night was the 2-month delayed Academy Awards, and it was very different than other years. So without going into the winners just yet, what were your thoughts on the actual show?
Live TV. Ahead, here we go. Welcome.
It to the started. 93rd Oscars. I hated not having the clips of the movies and those long, rambling introductions to each candidate that were like, in some cases, stumbled and tripped over. You know, so people reading off prompter.
I have to be honest.
It just
things have gone differently this
didn't
past
add anything. It somehow went long. You would think it would be shorter because those things were scripted and relatively to time, and yet somehow it went long. And
tonight I'm going up.
Then out of nowhere, they did the interminable bit. I'm sorry, Laurel, how it's funny. That trivia thing went so bad until they got to the Glenn Close thing. And then people were like, well, I can't believe Glenn Close knew that. And I was like, it's scripted, you dummies.
But that was totally scripted.
Totally scripted. So, everyone always says it's boring every year. And they said it's boring this year. And part of me is like, what did you expect would happen?
Right.
I didn't hate the like smaller setting, fewer people. I feel like the speeches got to go on longer. Maybe that's where we went over time. And part of me is torn because I'm like, well, I don't want to cut some people off, but I definitely want to cut other people off. So it didn't, if the part of it is like it's a fun escapist celebration of the movies, they failed at that miserably, I thought, because I've always said I'm a sucker for the like it's the movies montages where they celebrate movies and like the power of movies. I love those because I love movies, and that's why I'm like hooked in the first place and sitting through this long ass ceremony. But the lack of clips, no original song performances, like all they kind of sucked the life out of it. And then they did the things in the weird order, which I know gets into the winners, but they did things in the weird order, obviously, to engineer what they thought would be a dramatic and cathartic and ending honoring somebody, and they failed miserably, which does prove, I guess, they just don't truly know the winners at the end.
Yeah.
So that's a nice confirmation. And then my final beef with it was that In Memoriam was offensively fast. You could barely read who anybody was.
I think they could have played Yakety Sax over
that's
it.
That's what
how
I was. Yeah, was I was like, they're gonna play the Benny Hill music on this because sorry, Chadwick, sorry, people we left out of the montage anyway. Like, it's terrible. Like, if they wanted to truly honor some people, they wanted to truly honor like a Chadwick Boseman, give them make an actual segment out of it.
And about the musical thing, I think it's a bigger insult that the artists actually did all perform the music, but they all did it before the show, and then they put it on like Twitter.
Yeah,
which is like, why bother doing that? Like, you know, show me the musical numbers.
And they looked like amazing performances. The Husovic performance in Husovic was amazing when I saw it. The Leslie Odom Jr. and the Herper, like they all looked really intense and cool and exciting. And they're just shunted off in a thing no one's even watching.
Okay, Pete, what about you?
I mean,
rant over.
I couldn't agree more with what Elizabeth said, but I'll take it a step further. Last night's show is exactly the reason why so many people hate Hollywood. Like, not Hollywood films or Hollywood people, but Hollywood in general, because It was all of the bad tendencies without any of the good stuff. It was all the patting themselves on the back. It was all the faux outrage that everybody had to have. And it started from the beginning of the show. And somebody tell me I'm wrong. When having Regina King come out and start off the show talking about the Derek Chauvin trial, it to me, like, and she's saying, oh, you know, it's a good thing that they got the guilty verdict, because if not, I wouldn't be here. I'd be wearing combat boots and I'd be marching right now. It sounded a lot to me like those guys in the NBA who were in the stands at the finals saying, it's a good thing nobody had to play me this week. You know, it's like, yeah, great. You would have done this had it not been for the fact that everything worked out the way it was supposed to. So why are you even bringing it up? You're starting off an award show in the middle of a pandemic with the most political statement you can make in an award season that's already been so politicized that the films and the people chosen were almost done by design to show just how inclusive the Oscars were, and still you had to start the show off like that, and then it just went downhill from there. Everything about the show was like very. They didn't realize their own mistakes, you know, mm-hmm. and the fact that they let those speeches go on forever and ever, it made you say, look, wow, this could have been a 2-hour show where you could have done clips and maybe you could have had those musical performances, even though most of those songs were unremarkable. At least you would have gotten some entertainment, but instead you get that Laurel guy coming out and doing a horribly scripted thing that people are going to remember is Glenn Close dancing. That's mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be the best moment of the Oscars. Although to me the best moment of the Oscars was literally the look on everyone's face when they didn't say Chadwick Boseman's name at the end, and then it immediately ended.
They turned on the lights and you didn't say shit. You can't go.
It was just like it ended. Uh-oh, did they shoot Tony?
the best joke I saw about the Glenn Close thing, I cannot take credit, is someone posted the picture. Oh, excuse me, stewardess, I speak jive.
Yeah, they just did the airplane bit.
Yeah.
Just play the clip from Airplane. That's better anyway.
Okay, Stuart, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
So the best parts of the Oscars are the jokes, the clips, and the musical performances. They took out all of those. The worst parts are the speeches, the mm-hmm. awkward banter with the celebrities, and whatever like serious scripted stuff they do. That's what they added in. It was like they literally just decided we're gonna do all of the worst parts more and take out all the good stuff. Exactly. It's amazing to me that you can make great movies. Like, people in Hollywood can make these great movies and then just fuck this up so incredibly. Like, clearly the people making the movies are not doing the Oscars. I mean, like, what the fuck is Steven Soderbergh doing? I mean, come on.
It's like they came to him. They're like, Steven, what do you want to do? And he's like, chaos. That's it. That was his theme.
Has he, like, gotten snubbed at some point? Like, that's the only explanation I can think.
He might have been.
Is this revenge?
Okay, guys, I want to get to everybody. Danny, did you want to say something? Because I want to hear everybody's thoughts on the show. Go ahead.
It's like, it's a catch-22, because in the past, people have complained that people are cut off in their speeches, and now that people were given the right to speak what they wanted, people are still complaining about that. So you're not going to win no matter what you decide to do. But I do agree, some of the speeches were really good. But others, it's like, okay, are we done yet? You know, but one thing I definitely missed was an orchestra. You know, mm-hmm. they bring some sort of class. Having a DJ, no. Yeah. Not for the Academy Award.
Why did Brad Pitt get the Fight the Power music intro? That was my big question.
Yeah.
Questionable.
It was ridiculous.
He does have children of different ethnicities. So yeah.
But and he does do a lot of producing of like black-led films behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and he stays in the background for the most part. So I guess pretty tangential.
But wait, but Peter, I mean, you make the point that Brad Pitt has like multiracial children, but like, if Thomas or George Washington walked across the stage, would you give him Fight the Power? You would. You'd be like, no.
He should have got Weird Al's eat it, because he's always eating stuff in movies. I mean,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like
they should ever link Public Enemy and Brad Pitt together.
Yeah,
not ever. Even the movie Public Enemies.
Exactly. Brad Pitt. Go back to Danny. Go ahead, Danny.
Sorry, Danny.
Yeah, but definitely the rearranging of the major awards at the end was so ridiculous. It was such a disrespectful moment, not only to films but to moviegoers. When you have such an iconic figure as Rita Moreno presenting, you know, Best Picture, and she's not the last
Live
presenter,
TV.
You know,
here we go.
It's ridiculous. Welcome. She at least had something prepared. Joaquin Phoenix had nothing prepared, you know, and oh yeah, boom, here's the winner. Thank you. Bye.
Quite a year.
It was a slap in the face to so many people.
In the middle of it.
I could have actually said, I actually kind of like the show, so many, but that moment right there ruined it.
It's so interesting to hear everybody's perspective on the show last night that we all watched. Chris, did you want to add
I
them?
I did not watch it. No, all I did was look up because I knew it was going to be whack because I saw what they did with the Emmys and I saw what they did with all the other award shows. And I was like, I know there's no way I can enjoy this. Also, too, like all the things that y'all said were missing, like that's the part of what I like about the Oscars. And I knew that wasn't going to be there. And also a DJ, disgusting.
Yeah. So,
I knew I couldn't watch. I just looked up, you know, who won and shit like that.
Okay, can I add like some positives? Like,
yeah, if you
I really liked the smaller setting.
Yeah, I did.
Obviously because they were bringing people in and out. Because when they showed that outside thing, that was actually like the secondary room, the outside part, and that's where they roll people in and out. Poor Vanessa Kirby had like five different people sitting with her the whole night, and then they just shoved Carrie Mulligan in a darkened corner. You could barely even see her. But still, and of course, they'd have the camera go around to the which is really nice, too, in a way, because a lot of people that normally would just be, like, sitting in the back somewhere they would have on them real quick, they kind of get a little more intimate thing. But then they looked at the cameraman like he was wearing something offensive or something. It's like, smile, you're at the Oscars, you know? But other than that, like there's a lot of negative stuff. Why did some people get clips and some people get his favorite movie at 9 was this? I mean, I didn't get it. And then, God, my gosh. And I know we talked about Danny had said, hey, we want to let people go with their speeches. That one guy who won Best Documentary was on there for like 20 minutes. He goes, at one point he's like, so I remember when the editing room one day, when we were just kind of rolling, he starts just running into random stories. And it's just like, dude, there's a point. There's a point where you stop.
What about the guy in France or something that was best short animation or something that was on for like 25 minutes?
Yeah.
With an accent that you couldn't understand half of what he was saying in the first
place. And the rest of his group was there in L.A. They picked the guy in France to talk. So the rest of the group was just standing up there awkwardly as the camera's running around. Why that guy just decides to go off on some tangent about what he ate for lunch last week.
I believe they were asked to only have one person speak.
Yeah.
But that kind of sucks because if we all, you know, write a script and only one of us gets to talk, that's not cool. See, everyone should have their moment.
This is the thing, though. The Oscars are always the worst of the award shows, you know, as far as what they put together, because it seems like when you watch the Grammys or the Tonys or even the Emmys, they seem to make a point of trying to put on a good show. Whereas I think the Oscars always say, well, we've got the biggest star power, so that's what's going to get people to watch. And because we have the biggest worldwide presence, because our films are everywhere, that'll get people in the watch. And this year, it proved that wasn't the case, because number one, none of the movies were star power movies. And then the second thing was, you know, they try to humanize the stories, and then you realize very quickly, I really don't care what the first movie was that the guy who's up for best hair and makeup saw first.
I just don't care.
And in typical Hollywood fashion, the first two that they do with the writers so they can get them out of the room as quickly as they can.
They
had a free buffet outside. The writers probably weren't complaining because they love a free buffet, but they were probably already pushing them on the red line before the next award was coming up. They were like, you guys go home.
Shoot, get out of here.
Okay, Joe.
Like, it wasn't even dark out yet, and they're like, okay, you guys are out of here.
Joe gave a positive, so I'm going to give one. It's a two-part, because I think one of the best things last night were the previews to In the Heights and West Side Story. West Side Story gave me chills. I can't wait for that.
It looks awesome.
So, yeah, but don't keep telling me that I got to go back to the theater either. And they were shoving that down my throat.
Go back when you're goddamn ready.
Yeah.
Not that I don't want to go to a theater. Like,
I'll go back to a theater when you go back into Dolby, you schmucks.
So I agree with everything that all of you guys said. But one thing I did like was I liked the fact that it was at Union Station, and I'm going to tell you why. Union Station has been so important to so many films. And to me, it was very old Hollywood. And I love that kind of
it's
stuff.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's a gorgeous place.
I thought that was really neat. So I had really high hopes when the show started. I said, wow, look at that. It's very nice. But then everything else you guys said, you know, I totally agree with you. Those speeches were way, way too long. And Danny, I know what you're saying. Like before, in the past, they would say, oh, they don't give people enough. You know what? If you can't say what you're going to say in like 45 seconds, then you know what? You're done. Like that, cap it off. Now, the In Memoriam, we were actually having dinner at that time, and Danny was texting me. I think you texted me about that. You're like, was it just me or was it really fast? And honestly, we weren't really paying attention. We were joking about other stuff. But I watched it last night, and I'm like, wow, they could have taken a little less, like they taken some of the time that they gave these speeches for the In Memoriam. Yeah, and I actually have a question about the In Memoriam that I'm going to save for a couple minutes, but we are going to talk about that too. But that's just, yeah, I mean, and the rearrangement of the categories at the end, that really honestly just doesn't bother me. Because I'm like, because everybody already knows that this is the best, you know, best actor, best actress, best picture. I might but have traded it was in my everything else that came boots. With that. And we're also going to talk about that in a few minutes. But
I'm going to get back to
me, that really bothers me. I don't really care.
I have to say, honestly, though, let me just really jump in. I'm so glad that they did what they did with the rearrangement because it just goes to show you what a fuck up the show was. Because had it been the normal way, there would have been like a weird 10 more minutes left of the show after they didn't give Chadwick Boseman the award. So doing it this way kind of just topped off a horrible evening all along.
But it would have allowed for Nomadland to at least celebrate, you know, she already had a historic win as the first woman of color director to ever win an Oscar and only the second woman to ever win. And then for it to take Best Picture, it really robs that movie of some of its momentum, you know, and so that killed that movie.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about the long speeches and how in the normal Oscar thing, they would have the orchestra play someone off. And now you've got this great chance because now instead you've got a DJ. Think of the great songs you could have played to get people off. Like someone's talking all of a sudden, move, bitch, get out the way, get out the way. That would be amazing.
You know what it was? It was like a really like a cheap MTV like award show with a bunch of douches.
No, MTV would have done a better job.
No, but I'm saying like it had that like douchey vibe. And I did miss the orchestra. I did miss the live music. And I like having a host. Jimmy Kimmel, the last times that, you know, the couple times that he did it, he was hilarious. He was one of my favorite, you know, hosts that they've had. And he made us laugh. And you know that's true because at our little award party, the host, everybody.
They don't like hosts that poke fun at them. Like on their big night, they don't like that. That's why anybody like Chris Rock didn't succeed at that job because they don't like hosts that are going to make them seem like they're human beings at their awards.
I'll say the reality awards is the same way. I'll say that.
Yeah.
So like I said, I really do want to talk about a lot of stuff, so I'm going to keep it moving. So let's talk about first the least surprising winners of the night. So who are the least surprising? Like you just knew it was going to be. These were like a shoe-in. Give me one. Elizabeth, what was one of them?
Nomadland for picture and director and actress. I know a lot of people wanted Viola to win, but I kind of figured they were going to lean towards Frances McDormand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chris, what about you?
Again, I didn't watch the show, but I knew like Danny Kaluuya was going to win. Or Lakeith Stanfield. Like, I knew one of them had to win something because like the incredible acting in that movie. I was like, if one of them doesn't, this Oscar is stupid, but he won, so we good.
Okay, Pete, what about you?
Well, I mean, on to the Daniel Kaluuya thing. I that even kind of adds to the ending of the show because you know that the only reason why they didn't make him a Best Actor nominee was to push everybody out of the way so that Chadwick Boseman could win that, and they so knew that he should be at least nominated, so
Him
in. That's why they put him in the Best Supporting category.
Yeah, because wasn't he the main actor? That was the
only the titular role.
Yeah,
along with Judas.
I don't think they were both
not in the title.
Because technically,
it was a movie that did not have a lead actor.
I think
it did. Lakeith Stanfield was the actor because it's based off the documentary of the guy who portrayed the rapper.
Yeah, but they put Lakeith in there too. Like, they both were supporting.
See, yeah, I know. I don't know why they did that. That was
I think they tried to claim like the vote got split or something.
Right.
That's bullshit.
We all know that's
what makes it funny though, because if you think about it, if they'd have been smart, They would definitely put Daniel Kaluuya in the best actor category. Then probably Lakeith Stanton might have won best supporting actor, and then Anthony Hopkins might not have won best actor. But instead, because of the way they did it, they got the old white guy.
The
old white guy that's not even going to show up.
Yeah,
be nice. He's in bed.
I mean, he didn't think he was going to win, and like that's
he didn't.
I mean, which is reasonable.
He shouldn't be traveling right now during COVID.
Yeah, no. If this is the Academy's fault, I don't want anyone to fault Anthony Hopkins. And he put out a very nice message this morning, saying, "I'm totally shocked. Thank you, and I, you know,
the photo looked Chadwick like
Boseman, yeah."
The photo that they used too looked like something out of like 1984. It was just like this like
Hey Danny, what was yours? What was a shoe-in for you?
Soul for animated feature.
Yeah.
I knew that was gonna win. I also hands down from the acting categories, I knew Daniel Kaluuya would win after seeing that movie. Yeah. His performance just blew me away.
Yeah.
And Yoo Jung-yoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Soul for the Soul for the soundtrack music. John Baptiste was just fantastic. That was such a great thing. And to see those guys get in there. And John Baptiste was just ecstatic to win. He was such a happy guy.
Yeah.
You know, of all the guys who were in the Fugees, he'd be the one person I wouldn't have assumed would ever win an Oscar. So it's kind of strange.
The world we live in.
In case anybody didn't know, he was in the Fugees.
Hey, Peter, don't forget, 3-6 Mafia has an Oscar. So just be
remember
that.
I thought maybe Wycliffe. Maybe Wycliffe, he could have won. Listen, or maybe Lord.
It could happen for anybody, baby.
Proz, maybe Proz, not John Batiste.
So is it safe to say then for everyone here on the panel, the biggest surprise was Best Actor, or does anybody else
have that?
I think,
all pundits, all signs pointed to Chadwick. And I read some explanation of why it could have, in like the theories of why it ended up being Anthony Hopkins, is that maybe the acting base didn't change as much as we thought. It is a performance that, you know, goes like where they awarding like career lifetime performance versus, you know, Chadwick's shorter body of work. But Hopkins already has an Oscar. It's not like he needs another one to solidify his stance as like one of the greats.
Yeah, I think
he's, you know, it's someone. I also saw someone posit that maybe Riz Ahmed and Chadwick split the vote and that Anthony Hopkins floated to the top because of that. But because the acting categories were kind of, at least the actress category was more up in the air, I think, than ever was.
I hate to say this, but I think part of it is also because of the year it was. I think a lot of the older people in the actor thing just didn't watch the movies. And Anthony Hopkins was the name that they recognized.
Mm-hmm. And it's a movie that very much appeals to like obvious. The thing that I read was because it is a broader pool and more international. You know, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is very American, so to speak. Yeah. And it's about its story and what's happening. And The Father is originally like a French play, then translated to English. It's like a Belgian director, Welsh actor. So it's sort of, it's international in the white sense of international. And if that's what's still predominating your voting body, then that will skew it versus the Chadwick's performance.
Okay, Danny, did you have another surprise?
No, going back to that, I think people who had seen Anthony Hopkins' performance back at, I think it was at the Telluride Festival. Mm-hmm. We're already calling it his best career performance.
Right.
Fantastic. And a friend of mine who is part of the Academy actually told me that there was a lot of support for him from the very get-go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that because everybody kept saying this is his best performance, I even questioned it. I'm like, how can he get better than Silence of the Lambs? But having seen the movie, I can see why. His performance is just phenomenal. you know, and being a bit of a sensitive, you know, subject matter, that tends to appeal to a lot of Oscar voters too.
Yeah.
And it's very hard, you know, to win Best Actor if your movie wasn't nominated for Best Film. And the last actor to have done that, I believe, was Jeff Bridges back in 2009 for Crazy Heart. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that might have been a deciding factor too, where, you know, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom wasn't nominated, but The Father was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was a big snub. I thought Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was an outstanding
film. It was probably my favorite
one. It should have been nominated for Best Picture. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was incredible. Stuart, and then we'll go to Pete, and then we're going to go through the main categories. Go ahead.
Well, going back to, you know, Ma Rainey being sub for Best Picture, the Academy just in general doesn't really respect theater. And Ma Rainey is really a theater piece that was adapted for the screen, and you can tell. But Chadwick Boseman's performance was, I can't think of a better film performance off the top of my head. It was really just incredible. I haven't seen The Father. I can't compare it to Anthony Hopkins' performance. But yeah, I mean, it was clearly really surprising. And I don't know the political campaigns, because, you know, that's also a part of it. But I am really surprised that, I'm sure he was too. I mean, if he thought that the campaign was big for him and he was going to win, he probably would have stayed up. But he clearly didn't think he was going to win.
Yeah. Pete?
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of pile on top of all that, the Father, of all the movies that were in the Best Actor category, The Father's the one that probably you had the least access to have seen. I mean, I'm sure it went out in screeners and you know, digital downloads and everything like that. But Ma Rainey was out for almost a year. It was on Netflix, which means it was in the widest possible arena of ways to see it. And it just, you know, it's almost weird because, again, they chose to do everything in this Oscars that took all the worst elements of an Oscar show and made them the main parts. And one of the things that we often look at when we talk about the bad parts of Oscars, it's the sentimental vote things that sometimes win. And this is the one time the sentimental vote didn't win. And because, you know, they probably had Chadwick Boseman's widow someplace in the back room waiting to come out. And, you know, they were probably like, oh, it's only a few more minutes. We're going to let it be the last one. Thanks.
I mean, I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead, but I just got to get it off my chest. That's the very frustrating part, is that they engineered this to try to get basically a free tribute out of it by having to have his wife come on and accept, I'm guessing, and purposely put Best Actor as last category as some kind of big finish. And I think it's very insulting to do that off of his death and try to profit off of his death. An executive said, we took a gamble and it still paid off because everyone's still talking about the show. Fuck you, man. That's a dead man you're trying to make, you know, a big moment out of. What, you know, if you wanted to really honor him, is you do a proper in memoriam and have him be a bigger part of it, because it was such a shocking, surprising, and heartbreaking death in Hollywood. I think that's, you know, sort of undeniable. But to rearrange it thinking you're going to get this moment, you know, when you produce TV, you try to set things up to get genuine moments. But if you over-engineer things and constrain things, then you will not get it. So, you know, it just absolutely blew up in their face. It was the stupidest move they could have done. And like I said, it, you know, cheapens Nomadland's win, which is a historic win. It's a waste of Rita Moreno, because she should have closed out the show as a historic Oscar winner herself, as Danny said. And it's just the most frustrating thing. And just the fact that they tried to use him like that and use his death like that is absolutely infuriating to me.
But just one last thing. Anybody ever asks themselves why a movie like Cats gets greenlit? The Oscars. Yeah. Because the same people make those decisions.
I mean, think of what his widow was going through. I mean, I'm sure she had to get camera ready. She's, mm-hmm. I don't know if she was there.
They probably didn't validate her parking afterwards.
But, you know, I mean, she's, imagine what she was going through in that moment. She knows they rearranged it. She mm-hmm. thinks she's going to be giving a speech. And to have that, you know, that closure, I guess, for her, and she doesn't get that. And mm-hmm. and just,
or even,
I mean,
to
I just
have to reopen that grief door.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And have to have it open this whole time in preparation, knowing that you probably have to give the speech, speak on your husband and everything, and then you don't do that, and so now you've dredged up all this emotion and thought, and now you're just, there's nowhere to put it.
And this was his last film. I mean, that's film, so yeah. sad.
And it was the worst of scenarios too, because if another actor who was there would have won, not Chadwick, they would have at least gone up there and said, "Hey, you know what? This Oscar really belongs mm-hmm. to Chadwick Boseman." Right. What is it? Yeah. No, the winner was the one guy that wasn't there. And then the presenter goes, "Oh, I accept on his behalf. Good night."
Yeah,
and it was like the camera, like he ran off before the camera could even catch up.
Yeah,
because
like he didn't have anything to say about Chadwick.
They should have seen it coming. The last two award shows were the BAFTAs and the Independent Spirit Awards, and Chadwick Boseman did not win either one of those. Mm-hmm. Anthony Hopkins won the BAFTA, and Riz Ahmed won the Spirit.
I'm going to say something, and I'm going to be the insensitive one right now on this panel, and you guys are probably going to hate me for what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've only seen Chadwick Boseman once in a movie, and it was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and he blew me away. I mean, his performance, the monologue that he does in that film, I was in tears. And I thought it was incredible. So I am not discounting his ability to be, an incredible actor. But again, the fact that everybody was banking on it because, you know, not only because he's just a good actor, but because he died, that's not fair either. I'm sorry.
That's grim and definitely self-serving in and of itself. Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, he should be remembered as an incredible actor that was gone too soon. And oh my God, I mean, it made me really sad watching that movie, thinking to myself, he could have done so much more. And yes, but the fact that people are upset because Anthony Hopkins already has an Academy Award and he didn't have to get another one, that is such bullshit.
I don't think anybody's upset that Anthony Hopkins
won. No, I'm saying based on what I've been reading, I'm not saying you guys, like mm-hmm. stuff that I was reading, you know, comments from people that were so angry.
Yeah.
And his widow was probably, you know, disappointed that she got ready. I mean, how many people get disappointed when they don't win an Academy Award and they go?
But it's different.
This is such a different scenario.
It's different.
Because they so clearly thought that that's how it was going to go down.
Also,
and they were going to try to make this moment.
Also,
we have to we have to reward him. He died. And he was a great actor.
I gotta say this.
I don't know.
I feel, and I know, like, getting nominated for an Academy Award is such a huge deal. But I kind of feel for people that, like, if this is going to be their only nomination, if this is going to be the only Academy Awards that they go to, that they got this one. I mean, to me, I had to say that, but that kind of was the look on Vanessa Kirby's face when she was thinking, what if I never get another one again? This is the shit show that I got invited to. I really feel bad for them. I really hope that they get another one, because it just feels like, oh my God, it's like it was like being invited to the worst award show ever. And like, and everyone who did that whole, Snow White bit years ago, you're safe now, because it's no longer the worst Academy Awards ever.
Yeah. and Hathaway, James Franco, you're off the hook. Congratulations.
Yeah, no, but I really did. I mean, I would have loved to have seen him win, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, seen his widow come up and accept it. But I was also very happy that Anthony Hopkins won, because he deserved it. He did an incredible performance.
And yeah, I think the frustration is less with, like, there are people who are, as you said, mad that he won over Chadwick in, like, a competitive, you know, who deserves it more sense. But I think people aren't necessarily, like, it's not that it went to an undeserving person.
Mm-hmm.
I think the bigger frustration is that they thought they were going to do this thing and then it didn't happen. And they sort of set everybody up for failure. Because it cheapens Anthony Hopkins' wins, because now he has to wake up to ever being like, fuck Hannibal Lecter, am I right? And he's like, well, I'm sorry, I'm 83 and I make cute Instagram videos of myself in Wales. What's happening? Oh, fuck, you know? And he has to make, you know, he has to make a, not a speech.
Well, and I know, yeah, he did mention Chadwick, you know, when he did. And again, he didn't have to because that was his moment, but he did anyway. Like, and that's
a gracious guy, gracious winner. Yeah,
exactly. And that's my point. Just because it was a tragic death and it's terrible that he died, but it's like everybody's just like, oh my God, he's got to win because, you know, he died. That's it.
It just cheapens the whole enterprise.
You know, and I think that's where I'm coming from.
For actor goes to.
Okay, Danny, and then I want to move on. Go ahead, Danny.
I think Yoo Jung Yoon said it in her speech too. Like, how could I have won? You know, because I played my role the best. Like, each individual person played their role the best. We didn't all play the same role. So how can you say one person's better than the other?
Yeah,
I mean, it's completely things, so it becomes more of a what moved you, I guess, you know, which performance moved you more than which performance was the best. You know, and I'm kind of seeing that because I know this Friday we have departmental awards, which apparently they've never done before, and I'm nominated for one of the top awards, but how does my role compare to someone who's a surgeon, you know, when I'm not at that level, but yet I'm competing against them? You know, it's like, I think the nomination itself is, should be rewarded itself for everybody at the Oscars, you know, because I don't know, they're not doing the same thing,
you know,
which is why I like her speech a lot.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that it was pretty funny.
You know, you go in and you Nancy Kerrigan, that surgeon, tire iron to the knee, guaranteed win, Danny.
Go for the hands.
Yeah, the hands, you're right.
or play a woman who just had a stroke.
I also have one final
question. She won because she had the stroke in the movie.
In the movie.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, sorry. I ruined Minari for you.
What the hell?
So I actually have one more question about Chadwick Boseman before we go to the final segment. So he got the top honor in the In Memoriam over Sean Connery. Was that the right decision?
No.
Yes.
No.
Sorry, Sean Connery, but yes.
No, absolutely not. And Sean Connery did win an Oscar. Sean Connery had a 50-year career. And you know what, again, this is just the Oscars being the either one of two things, either the sentimental Oscars or the woke Oscars. It depends on which one you want to go with.
I think it's both.
A lot of people die of cancer, and probably a lot of people in the 400 people that they showed in 2 minutes died of cancer last year. And the fact that they chose Chadwick Boseman over Sean Connery, you know, I heard people say, oh, you know, but he did beat his wife. Well, okay, he did, or at least he said he gave her a smack once in a while. But he still was an Oscar winner, and this was an award that was based around Oscar's history. So to me, like, I thought that Sean Connery should have gone last.
No, I don't think it mattered in that In Memoriam because they did the whole thing so damn fast.
Yeah,
did it really matter who was the last one at that point? Everyone kind of got screwed on that one.
How old was Sean Connery?
It doesn't matter, though. He was still Sean Connery.
I think losing Chadwick Boseman, for many people, was such a shock. I mean, because we didn't know this was going on with him, and he was still very young, where Sean Connery was 93. Like, if you see his name trending on Twitter, you assume he's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, where Chadwick Boseman, like, oh, you assume a trailer just came out. Like, no, I mean, that's...
So, 90, okay, 90. So let's say, like, I mean, I don't want to say anything like bad about this, but let's just pretend, I mean, God forbid, we lose Tom Hanks, you know, because he's just, okay, he's older, whatever, and Sacha Baron Cohen gets run over by a bus or something in the In Memoriam. Should we have Sacha Baron Cohen at the end as opposed to Tom Hanks?
I don't think Sean Connery and Chadwick Boseman are as far apart as you think they are. Like in terms of
they are, because there's a 50-year career difference.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. I'm not saying that it's not a tragic loss. I'm not saying that it's not a horrible thing. We lost somebody that actually might have had an amazing 50-year career as well. What I'm saying is if you're honoring the people that are part of Oscar history, the last person should probably be the most prominent person of the group of people who died in Oscar history.
And when's the last time you thought about Sean Connery before he died?
N11.
Yeah.
By the way, Sasha and Isla kind of got screwed too because they were in Australia. They had to get all dressed up, makeup, that whole thing for that one shot because that's all it was.
They were in front of a green screen.
What time was it at that point? It was like four in the morning.
Fine, Joe. I have a feeling they're.
I think it's a pretty even like just it's just the next day or the day before or something.
Yeah.
No, look, no one is ever going to be happy with who gets the top slot in the In Memoriam. And there's always the complaint of who gets more claps during the In Memoriam. You know, your behind-the-scenes people and writers and whatnot never get the same amount of clapping that a director or a big-name actor does. So is that fair? Should you have to clap evenly, even if you didn't care about who was who? The In Memoriam is always fraught, don't get me wrong. But I don't think it's a problem to end on Chadwick Boseman, because I think the tragedy, sadly, kind of outweighs the length of Connery's career.
And the song should have been something a little bit better.
I was like Stevie Wonder. But it was like Stevie Wonder on speed.
Another thing I'll throw out is the age of the viewers. What's the average age of an Oscar viewer? And
it actually is older, so it should have been Sean Connery. But they're always trying for the younger crew.
I mean, the only movie I remember seeing Sean Connery in is like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Like that's what I remember of Sean Connery. That's like the only one.
Definitely not be making this argument, because he was awesome in that fucking movie, sir.
And he was great in that movie. He was an awesome actor for 50 years.
Movies like that for 50 years. So,
But here's the thing, too. At the end of the day, do you remember who went last in like the year that all those people died in 2016? I don't. It doesn't matter at the end of the day.
It's an irrelevant argument, but it's just one of those many arguments that, like, if we'd been sitting in the same room doing the Oscar ballots like we would do on any other given year, there would have been just as many people that would probably have written Sean Connery's name down as Chadwick Boseman, thinking that, there's certain people that are going to say, oh, the sentimental one is going to be Chadwick Boseman, but, you know, the realistic one is Sean Connery. So,
the year that I am thinking of when, like, Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds died, I think we all guessed that they would – one of those two would be the final one in the In Memoriam. And I believe it was Gene Wilder, because I think they were using the song. So there's also that factor. Sometimes they do it by recency of who died. You know, honestly, I Turner Classic Movies does them best. They do beautiful, long, you know, ones. I often go back to the one the year Robin Williams died, because the song is really good and sad. And it's very beautifully laid out. But guess what? He's not the despite the tragedy, he's not the final one in the montage. It's Shirley Temple. But then other years, it is the person who died tragically. It's arbitrary.
Yeah.
Okay, so to end tonight's show, then, I thought we would go around, and if you disagreed based on what you saw this year, if you disagreed on some of the main awards, if you thought, oh, so this person should have gotten it instead, I want you to share that with me, because I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say about that. So let's start with you, Stuart. Is there an award that you did not agree with, and who would you have given it to?
If you Nomadland was boring. It was It was a fine movie. It wasn't particularly compelling. It wasn't. I didn't think it was a very interesting story. I didn't really vibe with the characters very much. And I loved Ma Rainey. That was, I think, the best movie I've seen. Also, I want to throw in there Borat. Academy never ever honors comedy, and it should. So I think, the two best movies I've seen this year were Ma Rainey and Borat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it should go to Ma Rainey, personally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else?
Have to agree with Stuart. No Man Land to me was like, I thought I saw every movie on there. And to me,
I haven't seen a lot of unpopular.
I thought all the other movies were better than it, like Judas and the Black Messiah. Sound of Metal. All of those I thought were so much better. I realized what they were kind of going with No Man Land, but you know, it's also funny that No Man Land was the one that swept the Oscars, and outside they were taking all the homeless people away so they could have the Oscars, which they do out here in Hollywood too every year. But this is the whole point. Was like, okay, yeah, you know, I don't think No Man Land should have gotten the best picture accolades that it did. The director definitely, but like the other stuff, no. There were so many other better movies.
Okay, Pete, what about you?
Well, I disagree. I think Nomadland got the Oscar because it probably was the most challenging movie to make out of that group, because most of the people in it were actually those people. Mm-hmm. And they still made a very convincing film out of it. I thought it was a very good film. I didn't think it was the best movie of the year. I thought Promising Young Woman was a much better film.
Mm-hmm. Where can you watch that?
Amazon, you have to pay for it.
Okay. I can't find Minari and Promising Young Woman.
Those are both on Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay, but you have to rent them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although, I think you're going to be able to see
Promising. I think Promising Young Woman is going to come next month on HBO Max, I think.
Mm. Okay.
But yeah. I definitely would have given Carey Mulligan the best actress, because it of all the people who were nominated, it was the most difficult film to act in, because she goes through some serious shit in that movie, especially in that last half of it. And it's like the fact that like the way the whole thing plays out and everything else, it's such a dark movie, and her performance is just so good. Plus, on top of that, it's so prescient to things that are going on today, kind of like Nomadland. And that's why I thought she was going to win, because I thought, well, okay, the Oscar voters trying to be so in the moment. We're going to do mostly people of color, but then when they were going to get to the best actress, they'd say, oh my God, it's a woman involved in like a rape,
revenge.
Yeah, she rape prevention. She's rape revenge against men kind of thing. This is who we got to give it to. Like, that's why I voted for her for it. But I thought she also was the best out of all of them for the part. I mean, I mean, Frances McDormand seems like she could just walk out of her house and play whatever part she's put in. I mean, she's that good. People are going to start to realize that she's probably on par with like a Meryl Streep, in a sense of like, you could put her in. The only difference is she doesn't do a movie every year like Meryl Streep does, so you don't have a reason to just keep nominating her and not winning. So when she gets nominated, she does win. But yeah, I just thought Carey Mulligan was so much better than everybody else because of what she goes through in that film.
Okay, Danny, something that you didn't agree with.
I definitely agree with Peter. I think it should have been Carey Mulligan, because that was a phenomenal performance. But as far as Best Picture, Nomadland was okay. But out of that bunch, as much as I did like The Father, I really, really cannot stop raving about Judas and the Black Messiah. It was a phenomenal film. I also would have liked to have seen Diane Warren finally get an Oscar. You know, and I thought she would have been the underdog, but it ended up going to her.
Okay, Chris.
I don't know if I would give anybody a award per se. Like, I think that, you know, for the most part, they got it right. I would just move Lakeith Stanfield into the best actor category, so he can actually have a chance of getting the Oscar that he fucking deserves. Because I'm with Danny. Like, his role, him in that movie was probably one of the best performances we've seen all year. If not, I would have gotten somebody from I would have nominated somebody else from One Night in Miami to be in that category, because I think that those guys got snubbed a lot in the awards part.
Yeah, Lakeith kind of got screwed because he ended up going up against Daniel in both of those. And both of those performances were so good. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, if you could have put them and Chris is absolutely right. If you put them in different categories, Lakeith has a much better chance, because I like Lakeith's performance a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the guy that I think.
But he's not Fred Hampton. He's the guy who turned in Fred Hampton.
So he's the villain. The difference.
He's the one I picked. But like, so I kind of feel like, I mean, we know we're going to see some more from him, because he's a really good actor.
He's
going to keep killing it. It's just the whole point is like, he does this amazing like performance, and then he's got to go up against a guy that he was performing with. That has got to be so frustrating for those two guys.
I the only movie I didn't see was Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah. Oh, you gotta watch it. You gotta watch it. It's tough to watch, but it's really good.
Yeah, you are gonna get pissed off.
That was the only one I didn't see.
Oh, I was ready to go like burn a police station down afterwards.
Yeah, you're gonna get pissed off.
You need to see it.
Told me it was really good, so I definitely have to see it. But for me, it was for Best Picture. I did think Nomadland should have won. I just thought it was just incredible how most of these people weren't actors, but I did not agree with a couple. So for Best Actress, I wanted Viola Davis. I just, maybe because I just love her so much in anything that she does. Also for Best Actor, Riz Ahmed is Sound of Metal. And supporting actor, because again, I did not see Judas, Paul Raci. I thought he was so incredible in that movie too. He made me really believe that he was actually really good for praying. And those were the only ones that I was just kind of like, you know, not too sure about. But other than that, that's my thoughts. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I have to admit to being very behind on a lot of the movies and a lot of the performances and stuff. I mean, I think that's indicative of kind of the whole vibe. Is I also kept thinking, oh shit, the Oscars are this weekend, like all last week, and like being reminded at work on Friday, like, oh shit, because normally award season is like a month and a half long, you know, for 2 months, you know, every other weekend there's something going on and it's a big rush, and then you're done. This is all so drawn out and stuff because of the pandemic and all that. So I don't think there's a lot of momentum for a lot of things. It's like they made a big deal. There's like a Hollywood Reporter headline that was like, Nomadland's the lowest grossing movie. And I was like, yeah, no, ducks, we haven't been in theaters. Guys, chill. Well, it's not a big deal. It's to be expected. So I don't really have too many like, or anything that I'm like really like, oh, X should have won over Y. Because I haven't got a chance to see Ma Rainey yet, I didn't see the costumes, so I did pick Emma on my ballot because those costumes were really amazing. The Emma,
yeah, I picked Emma too.
Costumes, and when the Academy goes period, they go like really old period costumes and not like semi recent past. Although honestly, the 1920s are 100 years ago, so I think I gotta get over that. And then I know a lot of people wanted Crip Camp to win as best documentary.
I loved My Octopus Teacher.
And I know that people like the octopus. They didn't think the damn octopus, though.
Yeah, that was, I was like, what the, well, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but.
I mean, I kind of know what happens, but yeah. You can still thank the octopus up in Octopus Heaven.
We kind of gave it away now, Elizabeth.
Yeah, sorry. Well, it's been a while. It's not on me.
If you think it snuck up on you, I live two blocks from the Dolby. So normally I'm trapped in my house for 2 weeks leading up to the Oscars. Right. Like I Peter and Veronica always host the Oscar party, and I'm always the first one there because if I don't leave in the morning, I'm not getting out because of the way that they lock the whole area down.
No, that's true.
They lock the whole area down. This year, it really did sneak up on me. I was going to be going, when's the Oscars this year? Because normally there'd be like cement barriers out in front of my house. So,
and I did want Husevik to win for best song. I just think that would be really, really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I also, for Best Picture, like, we saw Minari, and I liked it a lot. I thought it was a very good movie, but I don't think it was Best Picture material. This should have been Ma Rainey again, and like what Stuart said earlier, you know, I really do hope that the Academy starts looking at these theatrical, you know, movies, and taking them serious, you know, and start recognizing them. If you have not seen that movie, I can't stop raving about how wonderful it is.
It was like it was the Brandon Tim Robbins fences did.
Yeah. They're always gonna wrinkle with that close because it's theater weird movies, it's a big difference. And there is a big difference, but
yeah, the difference is the acting is much better on the
that's so good.
And look at acting in Fences in Ma Rainey versus the other movies.
And the Academy, if you don't want your ratings to get better for the Oscars, you've gotta start thinking that way. Thinking that the way you guys are, because you're going back and back again to the old crap that was the reason why you didn't have the ratings in the first place.
Yeah, I don't think they like. I feel like people are going to be like, "Oh, the movies that were nominated were, you know, there's a lot of diverse nominations for once in acting and best picture and then subject matter." And I saw something where somebody commented like that. Oh, you know, it's the woke Oscars, and it's like, no. If you think harder about these movies, these are the types of movies that do win Oscars. They're just about not white men for once. You know, it's historical biopics. You know, historical plays. You know,
and yet the old white guy won.
And yet the old white guy won. So that should make people
happy,
right?
Do.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even get into
look. We're born white men. Like, that's an Oscar right there.
We didn't even get into a whole other topic that I wanted to talk about, but we've already gone over about other people complaining, like such as John Leguizamo saying that Latinos didn't get represented this year. There were Latinos that really didn't do any movies this year, so okay,
Gina Rodriguez all of a sudden.
We have a lot of
put them out there in order to get nominated.
You know, Yeah,
they'll totally make up for it next year. They'll give In the Heights like 42 nominations.
That's coming this year, so I'm pretty sure that's going to be nominated.
Oh, but what if it's best, with West Side Story and all the Puerto Rican actors?
There you go. I didn't even think of that. So here's a question though.
So they like both West Side Story and In the Heights were Broadway musicals, right? Before they were ever movies.
Correct.
So can you still nominate the songs from it?
Not for original song.
Not for original song.
Oh, really? So now we're going to get some real bullshit original song in both musicals.
they're going to add some shit in there.
Yeah, that was better about
In the Heights, though, because at least Lynn can write it.
If Home Around is involved, it's going to be fine. I think we're going to be okay. That bullshit.
Did he win for Moana? Because I think if he didn't, then I think he can.
I think Moana won. Yeah,
I don't think he did.
I don't think he did because he didn't get the EGOT that year, and everyone was like, "Oh, he got robbed." Because he was on like such a fucking hot streak. So yeah, he'll probably.
We were talking about that with him last night. That he's only a GOT, right?
Well, now he's not even because he didn't win last night.
He didn't win. So yeah, we were like, oh man, you know,
he could have been a GOT.
He could have gotten that as just a GT.
They only needed to do the E.
He's almost there.
Time to go win an Emmy and another Oscar.
So before I say goodbye, I did want to report to everyone that we did do our Oscar ballots for last night, and here's how it worked out. Tied for third and fourth were Elizabeth and Danny with 18 correct predictions and 5 incorrect ones. And tied for first goes to Peter and myself. With 19 correct predictions and only 4 incorrect ones. And no, we actually had different answers on a couple of categories. So that is our show.
Wait, where did I go?
So you don't want to know.
Let everyone know.
Even Ian beat you.
Ian beat you.
I thought you were trying to write it like the word ZZ Top with in lettering across the thing. Because you just seem to be randomly throwing predictions out there on some of these people.
I think, because I was keeping score too, I think you only got 9 out of 23.
God damn, bro.
Joe, you can't ever go with your heart in this kind of situation. You gotta.
I do every year because I purposely want to go last. I purposely want to be the last person.
I pick what's in my heart.
I listen to my heart.
So I used to do that too. I used to vote for the person who I wanted to win, and I'm like, this movie has to win. But again, I have to start thinking like the Academy.
Hey Joe, real quick, I'm doing a fantasy football league next year. If you want to get in on that, that'd be great. $50 buy-in.
I learned to go for the throat because you know my mom who's watching. Hi, mom. She would do the Detroit Free Press Oscar ballot every year, and one year she they have hundreds of entries, and a lot of people get a lot of stuff right. But she entered every year, and she won third place one year.
Nice.
You know, I can't believe that you're all thinking like the Academy does, because if that was the case, you all would have picked the old white guy.
Yeah, also, do you really want to think like the Academy? Like, is that really what you're aspiring to?
But now we can finally go to that goddamn museum. I gave them $100 like 2 years ago, and it's finally fucking opening in September.
Nice.
So that's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. Bye.
I'd like to see you in the theater.